Welcome back to the John Tesh Network, where we bring you intelligence for your life 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Streaming at Tesh.com or on the go, you can download the John Tesh Network application from the Google Play Store or the iOS iTunes Store. And then you can take intelligence for your life with you no matter where you are, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. My name is Mark Edwards, and one of the things we get the most questions about and the biggest reaction to when we post articles on Tesh.com about it is sleep and sleep problems and how to get a better night's sleep and why sleep is important. And I've gotten one of the nation's foremost sleep experts to join us today to talk about sleep and how you can sleep better and some of the things that you need to know about sleep. His name is Dr. Robert Rosenberg. He's been in the sleep business, for lack of a better term, for the last 20 years as a physician and a specialist in sleep medicine. He runs three sleep clinics in Arizona. They are the Sleep Disorder Center of Prescott Valley, Arizona, and the Sleep Disorder Center of Flagstaff, Arizona. And thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Thank you, Mark.
Let's talk a little bit about the whole concept of sleep, because most people probably don't get the kind of sleep that they need. And one of the things that you've written about and you talk about is sleep hygiene. Now, what does that mean?
Well, sleep hygiene is basically sleep behaviors. There are so many things that people do, especially those of us who have sleep problems, that are counterproductive to their ability to sleep. And a lot of it gets back to basic sleep hygiene. For instance, caffeinated beverages. Many people actually drink caffeine in the evening or right before bed. I've even had patients that consume caffeine when they can't get to sleep in the middle of the night. What people fail to realize is caffeine is a stimulant and that it blocks one of the main hormones produced in the brain called adenosine, which actually, as the day goes on, builds up into higher and higher concentrations and is one of the things that leads to our ability to fall asleep. It's called the homeostatic drive to sleep. Caffeine gets in there and literally blocks the receptor in the brain that adenosine needs in order to work. And a lot of people don't understand that caffeine may be metabolized in way more than 4 hours, and it also depends upon the amount. For instance, we find that elderly people, as we get into our 60s, 70s, and 80s, it may take 12, 14 hours to metabolize a cup of coffee. So even though you may be drinking at 11 or 12 o'clock in the morning, it may be lingering into your night and therefore deprive you of the ability to fall asleep. So that's one example. Another thing is darkness. People need darkness at night in order to produce melatonin. Melatonin runs away from light like cockroaches when you shine a light on in the middle of the night and you find them on your floor. Having grown up in New York City, I can tell you that actually happened to me. But that's exactly what happens. So if you get on your computer within an hour or two, or you're playing with your video games or whatever in bed, that bright light, when it hits your retina, literally turns off the production of melatonin. And melatonin is one of the main sleep-promoting hormones that we produce at about 8 or 9 o'clock at night to help induce us to sleep. So that's another example. A third thing is many people take their problems into the bedroom. They do their work in the bedroom. They begin to do their schedules in the bedroom. And what they don't realize is they are losing the ability to associate sleep with the bedroom. The brain begins to associate sleep with being awake, with problem solving, etc. And these are all counterproductive in terms of being able to fall asleep. So we urge our patients to do their work outside of the bedroom. We urge them to get into the bed only when they're truly sleepy. And we also urge them to try to get things dark and quiet before bed. Have a bedtime routine, whatever. But try not to bring these things into the bedroom, especially if you're somebody who has insomnia. Now, there are those of us who can sleep in the middle of a thunderstorm or whatever. But those of us who do have difficulty with sleep begin to develop counterproductive behaviors, a lot of them resolving around poor sleep hygiene. And it's not until they speak to somebody, read a book, or come to see someone like myself where we make them aware of the fact that what they're doing every day is actually causing or contributing significantly to their inability to sleep.
We're speaking with Dr. Robert Rosenberg, who is a renowned expert on sleep and sleep disorders. I guess you've just busted me because I charge my smartphone next to the bed and look at it right before I go to bed one last time just to see if there's any message or any whatever that I need to see.
Right.
So I'm doing something really bad when I do that, right?
Yeah, if you have a sleep problem, Mark. And the other thing a lot of people do is they put the alarm clock in a position where they can see it. And again, we're talking about people who have difficulty sleeping, not the people who can sleep no matter what. But if you're a person who has problems falling or staying asleep, and you put the alarm clock near your bed so that you can see it, you're going to wake up, you're going to look at that alarm clock, and then you're going to start to calculate how much time you've slept, how many hours do you have to sleep. Then you begin to ruminate, and then we use a word called catastrophize, where, I mean, you really become anxious about your inability to sleep. And this builds up and builds up until finally we develop what's called chronic insomnia in some people. And so, again, one of the things we ask them to do is to stop looking at the alarm clock. Put the alarm clock in such a place that you can hear it to wake you up in the morning, but do not put it in a place where you can see it, because it isn't going to do you any good. Going into a calculating mode for the brain, calculating time, hours, is going to increase the rate of your brain waves, and then it's very difficult to get them back into the slow patterns we need in order to attain sleep.
Now, one of the things I've read recently is that the amount of sleep you get, and maybe as much the quality of the sleep you get, can also affect your weight. And I'm not ashamed to admit I'm a fat guy, but is that partially one of the reasons that because I'm not sleeping as well as I could be?
Yes, absolutely. And we know the mechanisms now. We didn't know that maybe 10 years ago. For instance, lack of sleep is defined by probably less than 6.5 hours of sleep, although standard is probably 7.5 would be normal, 7 to 8. But people who sleep for less than 6.5 hours begin to show elevations in hormones that cause us to gain weight. So there's a hormone called ghrelin, which is secreted by the stomach, the lining of the stomach. And when we have a lack of sleep, we find extraordinarily high levels of ghrelin. Then we have another hormone called leptin, which inhibits appetite and also increases the basal metabolic rate, in other words, our energy consumption. And leptin is produced in smaller than normal amounts in people who don't get enough sleep. So when you consider that you've got too much of a stimulating hormone in terms of your appetite, and you're not producing enough leptin, which inhibits your appetite, then that is one of the major causes in this country of obesity in adults, and even in children, is lack of sleep.
So it doesn't matter as much what you're eating if you're not sleeping enough.
The eating is important, of course, and the calories you consume are always important.
Sure.
But if you're going to have a ravenous appetite because of lack of sleep, and if you have a hormone that's not being produced, which normally would help you in burning calories as well as suppressing your appetite, you're going to have a much harder time losing weight if you're trying to lose weight while you're also suffering from insufficient sleep.
Wow, that is truly amazing intelligence that I was not aware of. We are speaking with Dr. Robert Rosenberg. He's been a sleep specialist for some 20 years. He has 3 sleep clinics in Arizona, and we're talking about the health benefits of getting a good night's sleep and taking care of yourself before and during your sleep cycle. The cardiovascular problems can really be aggravated if you're not getting the right kind of sleep, can't they?
Right. Very much so. And also, it's not only so much not the right kind, but again, it comes down to duration of sleep. We know that people who have insufficient sleep, again, less than 6 or 6.5 hours, have a higher incidence of high blood pressure and heart disease than do those who sleep 7 to 8 hours. And we know that one of the reasons, of course, is when we sleep at night, our blood pressure normally drops about 10 to 15 points. We have 2 major autonomic or nervous systems in our body. One is the sympathetic or flight or fright system, and the other is the parasympathetic system, which is kind of a quiet system. Normally, when we sleep at night, the parasympathetic system takes over and our blood pressure and heart rates drop. But if you're only sleeping 5 or 6 hours a night, that's 2 or 3 hours where your body is being exposed to the sympathetic nervous system along with higher blood pressure readings. And so that's one cause. We also know that in people who get insufficient sleep, they begin to produce too much of what are called catecholamines. These are hormones produced by the adrenal gland that constrict the blood vessels and tend to raise the blood pressure. And we find that in people who get insufficient sleep, even as little as 2 days of sleep deprivation, if we check their urinary catecholamine levels, they are high. And they're not only high at night when they're not, but they're also high throughout the day. And so this leads to hypertension. And of course, this also can lead to heart attacks. So again, a lack of sleep, insufficient sleep, certainly promotes hypertension and cardiovascular disease.
Now, as we talk about all this, the theme that I'm hearing is that we need to get enough sleep every night, not just some nights, but every night. We're at that time of the year where we're busy, we're going to parties, we're cleaning the house, we're working extra maybe. How do you balance all the things you have to do with the fact that you know down deep you need to get that good night's sleep every night?
Well, you've got to look at sleep as one of the most important facets of your life. I mean, you spend a third of your life in sleep. And one of the major problems we have in this country is now called BISS syndrome. Those are all capitals, called Behaviorally Insufficient Sleep Syndrome. And it's just people trying to do too much, burn the candle at both ends, and eventually it catches up with them. And that's what we need to understand. I mean, if you've got a couple of days once in a while where you have to do a late nighter for exams or whatever, fine. But if you develop a pattern where you're constantly trying to get by on 5 or 6.5 hours of sleep, and some recent studies have shown as many as 30% of Americans, when questioned and polled, sleep less than 6 hours a night, which is another reason we probably have an obesity epidemic in this country. But the whole idea is for people to be educated and to understand that they really do need to get 7 to 8 hours of sleep a night if possible, and that they have to modify their behaviors as best they can in order to accomplish that.
If you are one of those people who can only get maybe 6 hours or 5 hours or whatever of sleep during the week, and you decide that you can sleep in on the weekends and get 10 or 11 hours, is that helping you or is that hurting you?
It's not helping you. That's called sleep debt. And the fact that you need to sleep 10 or 11 hours on the weekends indicates that you have built up a sleep debt. Again, what we call this drive to sleep. And basically, if you're going to go 5 days of sleep deprivation and 2 days of 11 hours of sleep, the cardiovascular problems we talked about are not going to be erased by that extra sleep on the weekends. You're still going to have the high blood pressure, the tendency to obesity, and all the other problems, insulin resistance, that result from lack of sleep. So I guess it's better maybe than doing nothing, but it's really not the way to go. You're not going to, in other words, that catch-up sleep isn't going to undo the harm physiologically that has been done to your body.
We have so much more I want to talk to you about. Your name is Dr. Robert Rosenberg. Your website is answersforsleep.com, answers, F-O-R, not the number, sleep.com. You are the proprietor of the Sleep Disorder Center of Prescott Valley, Arizona, and the Sleep Disorder Center of Flagstaff, Arizona. Can you hang on through the break? John Tesh is here. He's got some intelligence he wants to share, but I'd love to talk to you about some other things in the world of sleep and sleep research and the things that are going on in that world. Can you hang around for a few minutes?
Certainly I can.
Excellent. We will be back with Dr. Rosenberg in just a moment. But first, here is John Tesh with some intelligence for your life.